Today is Friday, August 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, a dangerous storm is making its way toward the southeast coast of the United States.
One of the things that has changed is we now are forecasting potentially to be 130 miles an hour at landfall, which is in the Category 4.
Results of an investigation into the former director of the FBI, who is likely responsible for the Russia investigation. Also ahead, Taylor Swift is now in a war of words with a White House advisor. It's all on today's International Edition. The Justice Department's Inspector General says former FBI Director James Comey broke Bureau rules in his handling of memos documenting private talks with President Trump. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The watchdog's office says Comey violated policies by giving one of the memos to a friend and telling them to share the contents with a New York Times reporter. Comey has said he wanted to make the details public in hopes of getting a special counsel appointed to lead the FBI's Trump campaign and Russia probe. Bob Mueller was appointed a day after the story broke. The Inspector General's office says Comey was not allowed to disclose sensitive information to get a personally desired outcome, though it notes the material was not classified. It's already said it will not prosecute Comey in this case.
Well, I asked Robert Deitz, professor of governmental affairs at George Mason University, for analysis.
It's a careful report, the way FBI IG Horowitz does reviews. And the most important accusation was a leaking of classified information to the public. And the IG report squarely rebuts that allegation. And so what Mr. Trump has been and his supporters have been accusing Comey of has been that argument has been defeated. Now, the IG did find that Comey violated Department of Justice and FBI policies and rules, but those aren't crimes. And if this happened during if an employee were still part of it, you'd be reprimanded for violating policies. But certainly not dismissed, certainly not fired. Sure as heck would not be arrested or charged with a crime. And that's the most important finding, in my view, that he was not charged with a crime because no crime was committed.
All right, that's Robert Deitz, professor of governmental affairs at George Mason University. President Trump canceled a visit to Poland Thursday, and Florida's governor expanded a state emergency to prepare for Hurricane Dorian, which is forecast to make landfall on the Atlantic coast as a dangerous Category 4 storm. Trump said Vice President Mike Pence would make the trip instead to Poland in his place so he could remain in the United States.
It's something very important for me to be here. The storm looks like it could be a very, very big one indeed.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who had already declared a state of emergency for 26 counties on the state's east coast, extended it Thursday to the whole of Florida.
You should have 7 days of food and medicine and water as part of your plan.
Dorian is expected to strengthen in the Atlantic with violent winds topping 130 miles per hour and possibly make landfall on the Labor Day holiday Monday. Joining us for the latest on this storm is Richard Pasch, senior hurricane specialist with the National Hurricane Center in Miami, Florida. What can you tell us, sir?
It is gradually intensifying. It does appear that it is strengthening, and we'll report on that.
What does it look like it is going to do at this current trajectory?
Well, we think it's not going to stay on the same trajectory. We think it's going to turn toward from a northwest heading to a west-northwest heading, which will take it heading for the Florida Peninsula. There's still a lot of uncertainty about where on the east coast of the Florida Peninsula we might see eventually landfall. Can't be sure yet. We've got different computer models giving different answers. The storm has been a little bit difficult to forecast.
Do you have any idea where or when it is expected to make landfall?
I really can't say for sure. It's looking now like it's going to be perhaps on Monday, but that's subject to uncertainty. You know, the models are changing and slowed it down a little bit from previous estimates.
What about the overall type of hurricane this is expected to be?
We think it's going to be a strong hurricane as it nears Florida. Every indication is that it will be a major hurricane, meaning, you know, winds greater than 100, 111 miles per hour, perhaps Category 4.
That is the second highest category. What kind of damage can a storm like that do?
Well, it can cause extensive damage to, say, the roofs, and the storm surge is still the main concern that will push onshore and be life-threatening. So that's what we need to watch out for.
So at this point, what are you telling folks that could be potentially in the path of this hurricane?
To make sure they've got their hurricane plan ready and start executing, doing things that need to be done well in advance. If you need that, then you should do it.
Richard Pasch, Senior Hurricane Specialist with the National Hurricane Center in Miami, Florida. And as we are seeing storms getting stronger, another alarming report is out. Scientists warn that Greenland's melting ice sheet is a real doomsday scenario. Rising temperatures and record heat this summer accelerated what has already been a much faster thaw than seen in previous years. VOA's Arash Arvasadi has more.
Sometimes modern problems call for classic solutions. This rebuilt DC-3 plane, originally constructed in 1942 for the Second World War, now flies missions helping NASA scientists research one of the biggest threats to human survival.
So each one of these giant blue boxes is filled with probes, which we're dropping into the ocean and using to measure just how much the oceans are warming and how that affects the sea.
Josh Willis is lead scientist for NASA's Oceans Melting Greenland, or OMG, project. He and his team are researching which is the bigger threat to glaciers, warmer air above or warmer waters below.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, drop, drop, drop.
They do that by dropping probes into the ice.
Probe to start talking back to the plane, and we have a signal. That means the probe's alive.
Next comes observation.
It's gone all the way down to 700 meters, and it'll probably go to 8. It might even go to 1,000. A few of these fjords are that deep.
Scientists say this ice sheet today melts 6 times faster than it did 20 years ago.
We're literally watching the Greenland ice sheet disappear right before our very eyes. And this is having an impact all around the planet. We all share one ocean, so 1 billion tons of ice lost here raises sea levels all across the world by a measured amount.
Measuring that amount is the whole point of the study.
If it happens at a rate where we're looking at many feet of sea level rise in the next 50 or 100 years, then it's going to have a huge impact for cities all across the planet. Billions of people live near the sea and will be affected by this rise. And in fact, they're already beginning to be affected.
The OMG project is currently in the 4th year of its 5-year mission. Scientists say if the world stays on its current path, climate change may ruin life as we know it. Just recently, amid concerns of rising sea levels, Indonesia announced plans to move its capital from Jakarta to the island Borneo. Arash Arvasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. The CDC says mumps are spreading in U.S. migrant detention centers. Uganda's Ministry of Health confirms an Ebola case from the Democratic Republic of Congo. China invests $16 billion in Nigeria's oil sector. And African giraffes are now officially on the endangered species list. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Hundreds of thousands of Rohingya refugees were seriously traumatized when Burmese troops launched a brutal clearance operation in August of 2017 that forced them to flee Myanmar for neighboring Bangladesh. Treating those suffering from mental illness because of trauma they endured has become a major challenge in Bangladesh refugee camps, especially for the child survivors, estimated to be 56% of those displaced. Steve Sanford has more.
You can hear comforting sounds of children having fun at the health clinic in Kutupalong, home to the world's largest refugee camp. But it's hard to imagine the atrocities that many of these children have witnessed when they fled the Burmese army.
At the beginning, it was like they couldn't speak because they had this horrific story, and also this troublesome when they were coming during the ways from the Myanmar to Bangladesh. So they had lots of things. But nowadays, slowly, they have the very good coping mechanism and strategies. And also, we think we are working for this resilience.
The new program encourages peer-to-peer support, allowing the children to open up about what's bothering them. Games like imitating animals while introducing themselves helps break the ice, especially for the children suffering from anxiety.
We come to study here, and leaders train us with messages. First, we have to make ourselves comfortable and not be depressed. Secondly, if we are not happy or have something stuck in our head, we need to speak to adults to release it. Message three, if we need help, not to be ashamed to ask for support. We are all humans and need support. Don't hold it in. Speak out and release your mind.
Everyone has been emotionally affected by the past. For 13-year-old Mohammed Rochelle, it's important that grown-ups not yell at the kids.
I want to speak to the adults and tell them not to speak harshly to the kids because it might affect them and make them upset.
Rohingya teens who have been chosen to lead the therapeutic sessions focus on coming to terms with daily hardships without dwelling on the past.
Many children have mental health issues. They can't eat or sleep. They can only think of what happened in the past in Myanmar. Some of the children's parents were killed along with their brothers and sisters. They are depressed and traumatized.
As a new generation of Rohingya youth struggles to cope, aid groups are hoping to increase awareness and treatment of mental illness manifesting itself now and in the future. Steve Sanford for VOA News in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh.
The United States Space Command officially launched Thursday with a White House ceremony hosted by President Trump and Vice President Pence. The launch of the Space Command will accelerate what has been a decades-long effort to reorganize and improve the U.S. military's technological capabilities in space.
Under General Raymond's leadership, SpaceCom will boldly deter aggression and outpace America's rivals by far.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman talks about it with Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb and asks why we need a Space Force and what exactly it will do.
Well, the president says that the United States Space Command will do a better job defending the military's ultimate high ground. He says all of the assets that the U.S. military and the U.S. government have in outer space. When you think about outer space, things that you need to do like banking, navigation, all of those day-to-day activities happen because of satellites that are in space, and the president says that those need to be defended from adversaries. He called today a landmark day, and it was a day that recognized the centrality of space to America's national security and defense.
When they say adversaries, to whom do they point?
Well, the president did not actually call out anyone in particular today, but many defense secretaries have called out Russia and China. If you go all the way back to Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis, I was with him in South America last year when he called out China's use of a ground-based missile in 2007 to destroy one of its own non-functional satellites. He said that was sending a clear message to the United States back then in 2007 that they can take out a satellite in space. Even Acting Secretary of Defense Pat Shanahan also sounded the alarm earlier this year, saying that the U.S. military isn't moving fast enough to stay ahead of China and Russia in space, and saying that the United States, even at this moment, was not capable of tracking some of China's rapid advancements in space weapons.
A lot has been made of the militarization of space. Now, I take it how the United States is putting this and placing it is that if somebody else is doing it, we have to do it as well. Is that correct?
Exactly. It all comes down to defending America's assets and the assets of their allies in space. And so what this administration wants to eventually do is take this Space Command and then use this as a launch pad to eventually establish a Space Force, as you mentioned. Now, they want the Space Force to be able to train and equip a group of people that would be tasked with defending all of these different assets. They're not there yet, though, because this Space Force, unlike like the Space Command, requires congressional approval and funding, and the president does not have that yet.
All right, that's Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. Well, the lineup is set for the next Democratic presidential debate in September. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone looks at who is in, who is out, and what it all means in the battle to see who will take on President Donald Trump in next year's election.
Former Vice President Joe Biden, the current frontrunner, based on a variety of public polling, heads the list of Democrats who qualified for the third presidential debate.
Now we got to put the country back together again. And it's not going to be enough just to have defeated Donald Trump. That will get the biggest impediment out of the way. But we have to unite the country. We have to bring the people together again.
For the first time, Biden will be on stage with a key rival, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. Warren has been rising in the polls with a promise of bringing sweeping change to the country.
We're not going to fix that with one little statute over here or a couple of regulations over there. The only way we fix that is with big structural change. You ready for some change?
Also on stage will be Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who continues to battle Warren for second place behind Biden.
We're not talking about utopia. We're simply talking about a nation where people live with dignity and security, and that is something we will achieve together.
In the America we believe in.
Also qualifying for the September debate are California Senator Kamala Harris, South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, former Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke, Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, former Housing Secretary Julian Castro, and entrepreneur Andrew Yang. For those contenders who did not qualify, it's a major blow, says Susan Page.
With a big field like this, it's hard to break through so that people notice you and can even think about whether they want to support you. If you can't make the debate stage, it just gets harder.
New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand was among those who failed to qualify, and she quickly decided to end her campaign.
But it's important to know when it's not your time, and to know how you can best serve your community and country.
The Democratic candidates debate.
The increasingly tougher qualifying standards to make the debates is beginning to sort out the Democratic field, says analyst Darrell West.
That field is going to start to shrink as we head into the fall, and as we get closer to Iowa, there are probably going to be about a dozen candidates that get taken seriously.
When our kids are watching today.
Among those failing to qualify for the next debate were Montana Governor Steve Bullock, Hawaii Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, and environmental activist and billionaire Tom Steyer. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, where does your food come from? Many city dwellers look no further than the local grocery store. But each summer, American state fairs give farmers the opportunity to show off their skills and give the rest of us a better idea of all the hard work that happens on the farms where food comes from. Saqib Ul Islam has more from the Maryland State Fair in Timonium.
A rainy day at Maryland State Fair may empty the outdoor rides, but does little to dampen the excitement of this American summer ritual.
Piglets!
I like the cows. And I like the pigs. Like, I learned everything. I'm new.
Pregnant animals visiting from local farms are a rare spectacle for kids anyway. From the city.
I learned that it takes a pig, like, maybe in 3 hours to give birth to all her piglets.
Chris Gabriel brought her grandchildren to learn about life in the countryside.
I want them to see that there are farms, there are woodlands, and there are people here that are dedicated to that, especially 4-H kids.
For more than 100 years, 4-H has been a group that helps teach children hands-on practical skills in science, healthy living, and agriculture. Many kids in the program end up showing off their farm skills in summer festivals like this one.
So this is like a culmination of their project work. So they get to bring it to the fair. It is on exhibition for the public.
Leslie Portfield teaches kids about the work that goes into the meals that they eat each day.
Because not a lot of people know where their food comes from or what particularly happens behind the scenes with agriculture. So being able to teach these people that don't have daily interaction with animals about specific things like how a goat's body system works or how we produce food and fiber and meat from cows.
With only 20% of Americans living in rural areas, for many visitors to the fair, this is their most extensive exposure to farm life, giving them a better appreciation that goes into raising animals and giving junior farmers an audience for their fruits of their hard work. In Timonium, Maryland, Saqibul Islam, VOA News.
Musicians and actors have long been known to use their songs and celebrity status to speak out on political issues they feel strongly about. And such is the case with Taylor Swift, who has been lately outspoken about discrimination based on gender or sexual orientation. She called out the Trump administration while accepting the award for Video of the Year at the MTV Music Video Awards last Sunday. Swift called on her supporters to ban discrimination of the LGBT community by supporting the Equality Act, which is already passed by the Democratic-controlled House of Representatives, but is being blocked in the Republican-led Senate.
At the end of this video, there was a petition, and there still is a petition.
Woo!
For the Equality Act that now has 500,000 signatures, which is 5 times the amount that it would need to warrant a response from the White House.
And now it seems she is in a public spat with White House advisor Kellyanne Conway, who invoked Taylor Swift's song, You Need to Calm Down.
When Hollywood and singers and all go political, it sounds in the moment like it's very popular, and we've seen so many times where it backfires and it blows up. The president and the White House support equality. We don't support pieces of legislation that have poison pills in it that can harm other people.
Well, Swift had previously stayed out of politics has become much more engaged since the 2018 elections. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you very much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Keith Holmes. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
On the internet, comparing all the girls who are killing it, but we figured you out. We all know now, we all got crowns. You need to calm down. Uh-oh.
Hello, this is James Butte, managing editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series. Education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Iranians are proud, and rightly so, of their millennia-long history of diverse religious communities and religious tolerance, said Scott Weiner, policy analyst for the Middle East at the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, in a recent webinar on Iran. Unfortunately, the actions of the current Iranian regime stand in sharp contrast to the country's history and traditions. Mr. Weiner says the government's repression of religious minorities is continuing and is likely to increase as it tries to coerce and scare members of these groups to acquiesce to government policies. Gunabadi Sufis, Christians, Baha'is, and secularists face a range of abuse, including self-censorship, arrest, economic and educational discrimination, imprisonment, and execution. Sunni Muslims also face discrimination on religious grounds, as do Shia, who do not follow the government's interpretation of Ja'afri Shia Islam. Under the government's interpretation, the rights of women are restricted as well, and non-heterosexual Iranians are pressured into sex reassignment surgery or, in some cases, given a death sentence. Part of the mandate of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, or USERF, is to make policy recommendations to the President, Secretary of State, and Congress. In the face of Iran's egregious and systematic violations of religious liberty, Mr. Weiner enumerated USERF's recommendations to U.S. policymakers. They include identifying Iranian government agencies and officials responsible for severe violations of religious freedom, freezing those individuals' assets and barring their entry into the United States, developing and utilizing new technologies to counter censorship and facilitate the free flow of information in and out of Iran, pressing for and working to secure the release of all prisoners of conscience, and reauthorizing and ensuring implementation of the Lautenberg Amendment, which aids persecuted Iranian religious minorities seeking refugee status in the United States. USERF Commissioner Johnny Moore said that these are specific ways that the United States can help create better conditions for religious freedom in Iran, and that this administration intends to make religious freedom a top priority in its foreign policy, and especially in its policy toward Iran.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is the